This week on RSBNB Update, the player-owned farm arrives, we get you started and run the rabbits through their paces in optimization, both in beans and experience. Plus, why the farm has a chance to become a true supplemental to farming. And recap of Double XP Weekend. This is RSBNB Update, episode 687, recorded Thursday, September 6th, 2018. The player-owned farm, Farming Reborn. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis and myself are in, as we are each and every week. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane.
So Double XP Weekend is here. It's gone. You know, I'm going to tell a story about this Double XP Weekend later.
Nice.
It didn't go exactly as I had planned, but it was fruitful. So we'll just leave it at that until later on. Those of you guys who are in Clan Quest will probably know what I was talking about. But nonetheless, we're here. We're going to discuss the update of the week, and that is, of course, the player-owned farm. You know, this update's been a long time coming. You know, for the longest time, we had thought that, oh, maybe we might get the player-owned farm instead of the aquarium. But no, the aquarium won. And when you think about it, when I think about the lineage of this update, I can't help but think that this is the way that Andrew would have wanted this update to roll out, especially in regards to the farming skill. Because just a bit of a background here first. You know, if you go back in time to when RuneScape Classic was around and RuneScape Classic was still being developed as the active version of RuneScape, and that was going to be the future going forward before they decided to do RuneScape 2, they had what was called the carpentry skill in-game. You could see on the level list, on the skill list, that everyone would have level 1 carpentry. Of course, carpentry was never put into game, and the idea behind the carpentry skill at the time would be that you would use this skill and you would build your own house, and there would be certain areas of the world where you would put your houses. So, for example, you could maybe put your house in Varrock or Falador, and then based on that, you would just be able to go to your house and use it like we use it today. So with that being said, carpentry and eventually became construction in RS3. And, you know, as that continued, they really wanted to do carpentry or construction on the surface world, but they couldn't because of engine limitations at the time. So they had to put it in to their own little instance box, which was known as the player-owned house. Then a little while later, we got the farming skill, which was was of course one of the very first pieces of instance content, you know, where we could all go to the Cather B farm patch and see our own vegetables but still interact with people, right? So it's this engine advancement from carpentry to construction to farming that has really led these two skills to become what they are today. And when you look back at the initial design document of RuneScape 2, and they wanted to bring construction to the surface world and whatnot, you could imagine that the player-owned farm is kind of like how the original construction would have been, and that you would have been able to build stuff in hotspots throughout the world, the surface world, and other people would interact with them, except this time we're doing it with the farm. So this update is a long time coming and goes back to a very early RuneScape 2 news post where they outlined what they wanted to do. So it was a long time coming.
Well, and we got a taste of that back with the invention workshop, right? Where
yes.
We could put our machines in there.
Yes.
And so we could kind of get a little glimpse of what this, you know, would look like having our own personal machines, but a community type place, a communal place.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to find the exact post here. I always look for this, want to look for this post, but I can never find it when it's time because it's so hard to search for the old RuneScape news post. But basically, this was a mantra back in the day of, here we are, RuneScape news post from 2004. My pinboard archive has it. Let's see. So if I pull this up, and can I open this here? And login required. Anyways, basically, I'll read to you guys what we have in this post here. This was a development plan as of March 31st, 2004. And in this included Viking areas and whatnot. And I think farming was mentioned here. No, I don't think farming was. But basically, they mentioned player-owned houses. Each player will have their own unique house, use the new carpentry skill to make new and rare things for your house, and use the farming skill to grow herbs and plants in the grounds of your house. So as you can see there, this was definitely something they wanted to do all the way back in 2004. And hey, we finally got it today. So here's the post. It's actually on the RuneScape website still, believe it or not, going all the way back, which is very nice. So anyways, I think we should jump forward into the future and the player-owned farm as we have it today. So Tanis, how did you feel about the farm on the day it came out?
So day of release was very hectic.
Yep. It almost felt like a new skill launch.
Yeah, it did. I'm not somebody that really loves to not have the information I feel like we need. I know that's there's a group of people that are really into the exploration. They like to figure it out. Yeah, Shane, I know that's how you're into that.
Me.
It's not really my cup of tea. I like to, you know, what to do. And I'm not talking about just like optimizing, but just, you know, like an outline, kind of like a rough understanding. And you kind of got that from the tutorial. One thing I want to say about the tutorial was I was really, really happy that they had those little dots, like what you see in Shattered Worlds, that like lead you from place to place, because that helped me a lot, because it was really, really busy. And it was really hard to see, like with everybody just all over the place and the different pins and everything. It was really hard for me to make out what was going on. So that helped a lot during the tutorial. But then once I got done with the tutorial, I started to try to go, you know, gathering, looking for my animals, and pretty much ran into a wall. And I haven't had a lot of success, but I wasn't going to pay stupid prices either, and I just thought it would be funner to get them on my own.
Yeah, you mentioned stupid what I wanted. Prices. You mentioned stupid prices.
Yeah.
You know, the tutorial was very evidently a Mod Raven tutorial, because I mean, if you look at it, you know, you say, oh, you're gonna spend 32 minutes and you're gonna have a fun time with Granny.
Yeah, what was the insinuation there?
I don't know. Then there was the other one when they were going through the breeding section. You know, you put the rabbits in the cage in the pen, and then you have frisky rabbits, and you have F-star rabbits.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you see the second time when you were Granny? And it's like, oh, well, that didn't take as long, but it was still fun. I'm like, I don't think I want to know. Like, what is...
and I mean, I think they can do that at this stage, given the way the game is. And, you know, as I said, Mond Raven update, and it's very, very, very apparent going through this. And I think it's hit the right notes so far. So,
yeah, I like Mond Raven doing this stuff so much more than I do the quest. Not that he makes great quests, but he also frustrates the hell out of me with his puzzles. So, yeah. Like, I loved this update. Like, this was just great because it had the humor and it had just the quirkiness and the, but it was also very full. Like, this feels like a fully flushed out, really decent, complete update.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, like a skill add-on, and it's, you know, one step below the mining and smithing rework, I feel, in terms of completeness, in terms of, you know, what you could actually add to the game. So that's really good. Now, you might be wondering, what do you need? Well, you need 20 construction and 17 farming to get going with this update. And, you know, when you think about it, that's not too bad today, right?
No, not too bad.
Yeah. But there are some other little requirements that you do need along the way, aside from 17 farming and 20 construction. It's kind of a hidden requirement that you'll have small, medium, and large pens, and each of these require up to level 60 construction, 15, 40, 60 for those. Oak, teak, mahogany planks, but the big one for the large pen is 225 rune nails. So someone who is an Iron Man character will need that level of smithing to make large pens. So,
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's ouch for them.
Yeah. But, you know, you do get, at the end of the day, when you're doing this tutorial, you do get enough beans to build your first pen and, you know, get some rabbits going. And that's effectively what the tutorial is. It's a mechanical tutorial. It teaches you where to go and what to do in the farm. It teaches you how to check for disease, how to breed the animals and whatnot. And basically, as a quick summary here, what you do is you start off with babies in the case of rabbits, and you want to check them, because when you check them, what that does is that solidifies their gender as male or female. Then you put them in their pen until they grow up, and what they'll do once they go in the pen is they'll need some food, and rabbits, you know, prefer food like seeds and fruit and whatnot. So you start off with some fruit, and you just dump the fruit into the pen, and they'll eat that fruit whenever needed. And, you know, the better the food, the happier the animals will be. So with that being said, you know, if you can go for a mid-level food for the animals, whatever it might be to start off with, that's good. And I think one of the things that people were confused about with this is that, okay, so I got these two rabbits, I'm going to let them grow up, and what can I do with them? I would recommend, and you know, this is a recommendation that I think everyone should follow. I sold my female rabbit by accident. So I could not start breeding rabbits until I managed to secure another female. So don't sell the two rabbits that you start off with, because if you want to experience the breeding process, you'll definitely want to let them breed together. So the way it works is that an adult or an elder animal can breed, and what you need to do is you need to head to the east side of the farm for that, and then when you're doing that, you just pop them into the breeding pen, and the rabbits breed like something every half hour, I think. So rabbits breed really quick, just as they do in real life, if you've ever had any experience with that. So after that, you'll get a baby rabbit running around. You'll bring it back to the pen. It'll grow up. And then what you want to do is that if you want to start farming beans with your rabbits, you can. And, you know, this is something that threw a lot of people off on the first day. But when you're getting started with these animals, you can sell them to the rabbit trader that'll appear, or yak trader might appear, even a dragon trader might appear. And this is governed based on what animals you have in your pens. So you're never going to have a trader appear for an animal that you don't have. So that's really good. Now, with that being said, you want to sell your animals at the adolescent age. And this is something you're going to need to check out and you're going to need to monitor, because for animals that grow really quick, like rabbits, you're going to want to get them at the adolescent age. Because if you sell them at adult or elder, you're going to take a bean hit on how much you're going to sell for. So, for example, an adolescent rabbit will sell for 25 beans, while an adult will only sell for 21. So you want to sell any animals that you want to sell for beans at the adolescent stage, which is right before adult. But if you don't want to sell them, just keep them until elder, and then they can breed in the breeding pen. And this is the same for all animals. And I think at this point we can talk about the animals that are in the farm, because, you know, I don't know. Do you think there's enough?
Well, I mean, we could always use more.
Yeah.
I'd like to see more on the large variety, I think. But Shane, before we move on, can you elaborate a little bit more on the food? That's something that I had trouble figuring out. Like, where do you get it? How do you?
Well, this is where your past farming endeavors will actually have a benefit. Because the various animals require different kinds of food. So rabbits will eat seeds, vegetables, and flowers. Chickens will only eat seeds, vegetables, and fruits, whereas chinchampas will eat everything, which I think makes sense. But at the very high end, for example, dragons will only eat meat and fish. So what you need to do with this is that when you click on your animal, you can on the default check screen that pops up when you click on your animal in any pen, it'll tell you what that critter will eat. So what you can do with that is you can just go to your bank and, you know, gather whatever kind of food that you have and just put it in the trough. And they eat very little. You know, you stock it up with 100 and they basically only eat one per tick. So if you stock it up with 100 raw fish, if you have a dragon, you're going to be good for a while.
So you can do this like with like noted, I take it, since you couldn't put 100 in your inventory?
No.
Oh.
No.
So you can't even do this easily until you get your enough beans for the bank chest.
Right.
And,
but when you look at the world map, the Ardoyan South Bank, or Ardoyan South, or North Bank is very close, and it's in running distance, so it's really not that far.
My rabbits are probably dead.
No, they're not.
I did not realize I had to keep feeding
they're
them.
They're not dead because no animal will die.
Oh, well, they're very hungry at this point.
Yeah.
And very skinny.
Right. And in case you're wondering what the food mechanics are, the food mechanics that we're aware of right now govern how fast the animal will grow and how fast they'll breed. And because of this, you'll see two little sliders on them. One is a happiness slider and one is a hunger slider. And the more that hunger slider goes up, the less likely they'll be able to breed. So that's what food is for. It's to keep them growing, keep them breeding.
Okay.
Now, when you're going to start off with this, you're going to get about 1,000 beans. And that's going to be enough to build one large pen, one medium pen, and your second small pen. And I would recommend everyone do that because, you know, large pens can hold up to 6 animals, the mediums can hold 4, and the large can hold 3. And when you think about it, you know, you're going to have the smallest ones breeding the most often, and the smallest ones, of course, will be, you know, your chickens and your rabbits. So there's that as well. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, looking at this, there's nothing really to worry about when it comes to breeding these animals, because I feel that after you've done it once, it becomes a fairly self-explanatory process. And I don't know, were you finding that the food wasn't necessarily the most explanatory of your of what you're saying?
Yeah, that and that and the traits were the big issue.
I actually want to talk a little bit about traits just a bit after, because that's very important, but at the same time it's not something that people need to worry about when they're first getting started. So the small pen can hold rabbits, chickens, or chinchampas. The medium pen is for sheep, spiders, and zygomites. And the large pen is for cows, yaks, or dragons. And, you know, based on whichever way you're going with this, you're going to need to look at your pens. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, the small pens, you know, they're okay, but you're not going to get the most beans or XP from them. Where it gets really interesting is when it comes into the sheep, spiders, and zygomites, because the sheep is one of the first things that you can farm that will actually have a good bean income, relatively speaking. You'll get 80 beans if you sell one of your sheep that you end up growing up at adolescent stage, which when you think about it, you need to do that a few times. And the sheep grow relatively quickly. I think they have like a 30-minute growth cycle. So the sheep will grow quickly, and you'll be able to, you know, get 80 beans in roughly what, hour and a half? Yeah. Or no, because they don't start off as an egg. So an hour. So basically what you do is if you pop the 4 sheep in a medium pen, you'd be getting 320 beans an hour if you were to just focus on using sheep for beans. And, you know, if you want to do it this way, this is a perfect way of doing your farm, because you can purchase the sheep from the store there. Granted, you'll lose 30 beans on that. So, you know, that's still 200 beans an hour by just growing these sheep from the store, right? And if you start breeding them on your own, then you're going to see that bean input increase. So it's actually a good way to get started, I think, with sheep. And I'm going to go into this now, but I should probably go into this a little bit more later. And, you know, this update as released is practically perfect, minus a couple of little RNG niggles here and there, which are being addressed as we go forward on this. And, you know, the beehive one was addressed today. So from a structural standpoint, this update is good. But there were a lot of people on the first day that this came out who were concerned about this and were wondering, you know, how are we going to make this update be most optimal for either XP or beans or whatnot. And, you know, I think that's the biggest complaint about this is that, yes, people want to get through this quickly, but at the same time, anyone who was around when farming first came out will know that it took us weeks to figure out all the growth times for the various farm animals and whatnot back in the day. So, you know, we're actually doing pretty well to have most of these figured out within 3 or 4 days of the update hitting. So there's that.
Yeah, and the optimization, I think you're right. That's definitely, you know, been something that people are kind of complaining about. I don't think that, for me, that's not like why I would have liked to had the information. I just would have liked to had a better like grasp of what was going on. And I agree with you. I think it's been really great. And the tiny little criticism I have is from a accessibility standpoint, a very particular circumstance, which I hope gets patched soon.
Yeah. Yeah. You can also, you know, just a fun little thing here, you can also farm chickens and whatnot, and the chicken eggs are relatively cheap, and you can buy them with beans. So I just did that to get a feel of it on day one. And the first chicken that I hatched was a rooster, and it was named Tyler. And I have a very good friend who's named Tyler. So I'm going to be keeping Tyler around on the farm for a very long time because it's very apt to Tyler. It says, hates everything. Yes, even you. But the chicken also has the studly trait, so that means that it's more likely to breed.
And now, also, we should point out, right, that not all you can't do that with all chicken eggs. You can't just walk up
right. You have to get the special eggs from the farm.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. But you know, there's a good laugh, and it was just really funny to see this. And no, I did not use a name reroll token on this. So, all right. So you know, people were concerned about optimization and whatnot, and after you grow your first batch of animals, you're going to want to start breeding with them. And, you know, you could very well just pick up a male and a female sheep and start breeding them. And every so often, the breeding pen would pop in. You'd have two baby sheep running around. Then you could grow those up in the medium pen and then take it off and sell it. That would be a perfectly viable way to do the farm. And you'd have, you know, upwards of 1,000 beans in probably about a week if you did it regularly. So that's one way of doing it. And, you know, I mentioned the elephant in the room and that everyone was working to get their comp cape back because the only comp requirement for this update is something called a music track. And to get the music tracks you need to have what's called a seasonalizer. And, you know, I think looking at it, I think people should be a little bit less concerned about comp with this update. Though, I mean, I don't know if it's worth the trauma that the game economy was put through for this. Because, you know, there's 4 music tracks, 1 for each season. And, you know, I would personally be fine with allowing everyone to wait for the season to come around. And they'd be waiting until, what, next March to get their comp back? And, you know, I don't have a comp cape. And I think that having hard requirements for comp is good. I personally wouldn't mind if they did that, but I don't think it's a good game design decision before anyone rakes me over the coals for that. And their fix for this was to put in an item in the game, in the reward shop, called the Seasonalizer, which I believe you can purchase for 2,000 beans. And, you know, I think that's what the main sticking point was for this update, is that, you know, we're going to want to get our comp capes back, but at the end of the day, we're going to need to get the beans as quick as we can to get the seasonalizer. And this had the unfortunate side effect of causing, well, maybe not unfortunate depending on how you look at it, but this had the side effect of causing black dragons to be worth upwards of 40 million GP an hour to go fight.
You know, I thought that stuff, look, I think that was fine. I mean, that was fine. This could have been an update for Skillers, but the minute that the other crew heard about it, they ran out there and just crushed the rest of us and didn't have a chance. And so, as usual, the rich got richer. And, it was rough. Yeah. I mean, I got crashed at the evil chicken lair. It's like you can't, like, you know, and I was down there with those Ushabis to put them in my dungeon.
Right.
I'm like, I'll do this in my dungeon and not bother anybody. And you still had people coming and crashing you with cannons and all this shit. I'm like, man, assholes. Just assholes.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that this, as much as we're saying this is an issue, this fixes one big problem with the farming skill that has existed. And do you know what that is?
No.
It gives the people who would train farming purely with war bands an outlet. This is, for all intents and purposes, farming for people who are interested in combat, because this is not going to replace now with – this is not going to replace a magic and palm tree run with Calquits thrown in. This is not going to replace that based on the amount of XP that you get. You're still going to get the primary amount of XP that you get from doing that kind of farming, but this is going to make it a little bit faster, especially if you have the elite farming outfit and you're going to use rapid growth, but we'll get to that in just a bit. So I think that this is actually farming for people who are interested in combat and to get people who are interested in combat to come back to the farming skill. Now, the downside of this, as we mentioned, is that various NPCs, spiders, rabbits, dragons, black dragons, they're all very, very busy because of the amount of people who are there. And, you know, I think you can expect that. You can expect that to happen. So,
And they're there for the money.
Right. Like, they're there for the money. They're not there for eggs. Right.
No. And if they want to – look, if you want to do farming through combat, you can do that. It's called seed aside and go do some Aquanites.
Seasonalizers, 5K. Corrected myself. Not 2K.
Oh. But, I mean, that's probably 70 or 80K farming an hour, which isn't great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you don't have to wait. I know Shane's like, you're hurting my soul, man. you're hurting. But I mean, you could do that if you were in the combat. You want to train farming that way. They're there for the money, and that's fine. It's just that don't be a dick, okay? Just be kind. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, because you know, these eggs are really rare. I spent probably about 2.5 hours at the Blue Dragons, and I only got one. I had to buy the other one. And, you know, this is another accessibility issue that you mentioned. The summoning eggs for the player-owned house, those do get a loot beam. The eggs for the farm do not get a loot beam, but they go straight into your inventory. So,
is that confirmed? Like,
actually, no, they don't. Sorry, that was a rumor, right? I actually tested that after I heard about that. Okay. No, they don't.
Okay. But that's why, because I heard that
all you get
too,
is green text,
and it didn't. Yeah, you get green text. So, like, yeah, that's something, but
if you miss that egg, you're SOL.
Yeah. So I would really like, and I don't know if that's just like, because they had the loot beam on summoning egg, that if it would be, I don't know why it is, but I please fix that, please, from an accessibility standpoint, fix that, because I have all these dragons in my dungeon now. I went out and got one of every color, well, and two blacks, and I was killing them because I thought they were going to go into my inventory. So I spent 2 or 3 hours doing that, not even realizing that wasn't the case. And so I don't know if I missed any or not. I have no idea.
Can you force Dragon Slayer task?
I don't know. You can prefer it.
Because I was wondering, how did you do that? Because you need to be on task to get the souls, right?
Oh, I don't. Mm-mm.
Oh, you don't?
No. Nah.
Oh, so I should have had those things with me when I was killing the blues. I thought you had to be on task for that.
Nah, and at least Blues, you got the resource dungeon.
Yeah, I didn't get crashed at all. I didn't get crashed at all, so that was good.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, 40 mil for for eggs. Thankfully, I got my second egg for 20 mil. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah, that was good. And, you know, there's also another benefit with dragons is that they can crossbreed. So you can breed a blue and a green together.
Oh, you can.
Yeah, you don't need to. To breed blacks together or blues together. That's cool. Apparently how you get the royal dragon.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what? Come on, guys, give me a beam. Give me a beam so I can get my drops.
Yeah.
Great. Because there's no way to like automatically get that too. You know,
that's
like
right.
I have all of my like automatic drop picker upper things, and that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you know, I'm also going to say that this update managed to increase engagement with farming for the first time ever since it came out. You know, everyone is interested in this, and you know, I'm speaking purely from the side of observing Clan Quest, the RSBNB friends chat. You know, we do have a few PVMers in Clan Quest, but it's not the majority. When I say everyone was interested in farming because of this update. And granted, it might not be the best XP for farming, though it might be, depending on how things go in the future with various traits and whatnot. I won't say best XP. It'll supplement the XP very nicely. It's not going to be the best in slot, but it will supplement the XP very nicely. Engagement has gone up, and I think for a skill that came out in 2006, if I recall the date, 2006 was good. So, or no, it wasn't 2006, probably 2007. That would be bad if I got that messed up. What date? What year it was?
What kind of farmer are you, Shane? Jeez.
Oh God, 2005.
Oh wow.
Anyways, so everyone has been engaging with this update, and that's good. And you know, that's why I'm willing to call this a success. And, you know, there have been a few niggles with RNG about breeding. They're going to make that more clear in the next patch. They fixed the issue with the beehive. We'll get to those in just a bit. So overall, I'd say it was a pretty successful update. And now we can get into some of the more interesting mechanics about the farm, I think. I want to talk about traits next. And, you know, if you look at the RS Wiki, the RS Wiki actually has done a really good job at compiling, these traits on this because, at the end of the day, we didn't know what we were getting going into this. So I just want to, go through this trait list and read through some of them right now because they can be, useful, and you can have really useless traits. So, for example, there's big boned, which means the animal puts on weight more easily. Curvy, this big boned beauty will win many competitions, just not a race.
Oh, wow.
Then there's constipated. The animal never produces dung. And this led to a very, very interesting exchange that I saw at the farm. Someone was asking, do you have a female constipated cow for sale? So.
Shane, did you know there is a Discord for trading too, and for everything, player
on
farm?
Is it the official Jagex Discord?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, I have that. I haven't looked into it since then. Let's see what they got in there.
It helps with the trading sometimes if you're trying it, because
you can trade checked things. Mm-hmm. It's only the unchecked that can go on the exchange. I'm not seeing it. It might be a different. Discord. Oh,
well, let me. I'll see.
Does it have JMods in it?
I don't know. I just got it like an hour before we went on.
What's its icon? Is it the farming icon? Or what's it actually called? Farming?
It's called Player Owned Farm.
Yeah, okay. I don't have that one. That's the non-Jagex one then. All right. I'll have to find a link to that in the show notes later. Okay. Other traits that are interesting are genetic mutation means that its offspring are more likely to have multiple traits, so that one could be good. There's also Giver, which the animal will award more XP when harvested, which is something that you do when the animal reaches adulthood. You'll have a harvest option, and for each stage of growth, you'll get XP and you'll get items from it. So for my blue dragons, I got blue dragon hides. So, you know, you can see where that's going with that. With this, there's also a stingy trait, which means that it's going to be less likely to produce to produce its goods. Or on the other hand, there's producer. It'll award more rewards when harvested. So as you can see here, based on these traits, you can tailor your animals so that if you're wanting an animal like a dragon that's going to give you more XP, you could potentially just ask for a dragon that has that has the producer trait on it. Or sorry, what was it again? If you want more resources, you'll go for the producer trait. So that's the one for that. Whereas on the other hand, giver will give you more XP when harvested. So.
Okay.
So that's the way it works with that.
And then the other ones are just like for lols, like the big bone lady and the curvy one and okay.
Yeah, and then there's ones like joyful and whatnot. Any that manage to increase happiness, and you can tell based on how it will how it looks and or when you examine the trait, it says it increases happiness. That means that the animal will be more likely to breed. And there are actually a whole bunch of traits on this list here that actually help it for breeding, and the folks at the RS Wiki have actually split them out on that into useful traits that are good for breeding on this. So for example, if you have the glistening trait, the animal's more likely to produce a shiny offspring. Good breeding. This animal carries some rare breed ancestry in its genetics and so on and so forth. There's genetic instability, ensures more traits, and jovial, joyful, and whatnot. These all increase happiness to various degrees. Immune increases its health. So, based on that, you can throw these various traits into the mix and you can have more successful breeding chances. So, for example, what you might want to do is you might want to have, one through various generations that would be jovial and studly, and they would be more successful at breeding. And then you could work them in with, a producer and whatnot, and maybe get some more producers along the way or some givers along the way. And that's what the optimization of this update is inevitably going to come down to, is whether or not people decide to optimize their traits at the end of the day. Because the traits are going to be one of the most important aspects of this update going forward. And I think everyone is just, very concerned about the beans right now and maxing out their farm. But at the end of the day, we don't even know what these shiny animals are going to look like or what they're going to do. And, if people are actually going to pay money for, say, a shiny chicken or a shiny rabbit, right?
Yeah.
Well, or a shiny dragon.
What was a some kind of a spider that my friend bought for 90 mil yesterday. It was a rare, it had rare traits. It was a rare spider. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. Hey, and we're heading along the way to genetic engineering in RuneScape with this. Hey, what an update. What an update.
Selective breeding.
Selective breeding. There you go. Yeah. There you go. And then there are just some, useless traits like INSEE. Involuntary, cynical, like many spiders. Like we don't know what that's going to do. Nuclear,
like
be
chicken.
Really careful with this one, and so on and so forth. There's a full list of traits here, and you can have the strawberry-scented trait. I'm imagining if you combine that trait with a cow, you'd be more likely to get a strawberry cow.
Do they produce strawberry milk?
Yes, they do.
All right.
So, touch of vanilla. So you can see what's going on here with that. So,
okay.
I think trade optimization is going to be something we can look at going forward on this. But I think at this point, the ones people will either want to go for are probably the producers or maybe the giver, depending on how you're feeling about these updates. So, and that takes me to where I want to go next on this, and that's optimizing for beans. And, if you look at the various charts that we have available here on the RS Wiki for this update, you'll see the amount of beans that you can sell these animals for. A dragon sells for 2,000 beans at adolescent stage, a yak 825, zygomite 850, and chinchampas 250. Now, with that being said, we mentioned before that the sheep was 80 or 80 base, and it works out to be 50 if you buy it from the actual shop there. So I think, and people can correct me if I'm wrong on this, I think what people are going to want to do for this is you're going to want to probably optimize yourself to either being somewhat regular with your farm and growing sheep and then selling them. Because like we mentioned, if you're going to be on for, you know, a few hours at a time, you can effectively, through breeding and whatnot and just raising sheep in general, you can potentially get up to 200 beans an hour doing sheep. So there's that. That's one way of doing it. Now, the other way of doing it, and I don't know if people are going down this path or if they're going for the more regular route. I think at this point everyone's doing the more regular route just because the eggs and whatnot are not you know, widespread. But another way of doing this, based on just looking at the time scales that these creatures take here to breed, and I think the growth cycles for zygomites are something like 18 hours. 18 hours for that. Now, you can wait for that, or you can just go for a bunch of zygomites and dragons every day and then put them in the breeding pen and then have one new one each day. And then just when you turn those in for 2,000 beans, that's effectively 2,000 beans a day. And you're just logging in once a day to do your check of the farm. That's another way to do it. So there's multiple ways to engage with this update. And, you know, the cows, as we mentioned, and the sheep are relatively short. If you're looking for something you could put into the large pen, that would be the cow. So what you would do is you just do a bunch of cows and sheep, and then you'd come back every hour or so, and voila, there you go. So that's one way of doing it. The other way is just every day with zygomites and dragons and whatnot. And then you could basically be getting, you know, probably around 3,000 beans a day if you do it right. So that's what I think. Or you can just brute force it like everyone did and buy dragons off the bat, wait for them to grow adolescent, and then just sell them to get your seasonalizer and be done with the update. So I think there are two distinct play styles here. I don't see the small animals being used much for beans just because they net so little. But at the start, it's a good way to go and just experience the farm, I feel. So,
and they don't produce as much, right? Like, is there anything that is, like, worth it? I think so I know rabbits, chinchampas, chickens. What do we get from those? Like
rabbits, you get rabbit teeth, which you use to make the super hunter potion.
Okay.
And you also get rabbit feet, which you use to make the luck necklaces if you didn't have those. Chickens, you just get eggs and feathers, which, I mean, you know.
Yay.
So, I mean, there's not much to write home about with that.
Right.
The chinchampa give you chinchampa residue, which is one of the new items they added in game for these potions. It's used for the invention potion. And then for sheep, you get a whole bunch of new styles of wool, which can be used to make the rune crafting potion. So, and the kind of wool that your animal produces is going to be determined by the season of your farm, which makes sense because that's what happens in real life with sheep and whatnot. So.
I did not know that.
Yeah, their fur has a different consistency at different times of year, and you use for different things. So, yeah.
Okay.
Zygomites give you Mortmeyer fungus and zygomite fruit. I'm not sure what the zygomite fruit is used for. Okay, that's a divination potion, and then there's mycelial webbing, which is used for the extreme invention potion. So. But basically what you're seeing here is that all these different animals produce various different products, and they can be used for, the various herb lore aspects of it. And, you know, the cows we already mentioned, they just produce different flavors of milk. So there's that.
Okay.
Yak tufts produce, or yaks produce yak tufts and yak hide and hair. That's used for the super divination potion. And then the dragons, of course, give you dragon hide. So basically what we're seeing here is that the yaks, zygomites, spiders, and chinchampas give you the ingredients for the four new potions that were added to game.
Okay. So the only, like, the only kind of tough part here is if you're trying to have the small, medium, and large pens all filled up and optimized the way you want it, you've only got one breeding pen.
Right.
So you're going to have to...
Now,
yeah.
Mod Raven tweeted that there might be a solution for this coming in a couple of weeks because it needs to go through QA because it's new code. But they're looking at making it unlock so that any pen can act as a breeding pen.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be... That would probably be good.
Yeah. You're cool. Going to have to, of course, pay beans for it. But, I mean, this will allow you to do some. And that's why I said that this isn't currently the best way of getting XP for farming. But it could be a nice supplemental in the future if you optimize traits and if you look at what they're doing with the breeding on this. And the reason for this is that every time you check a dragon grows up and becomes a baby from an egg, you get 20,000 XP. For the baby to adolescent phase, you get 30,000. From the adolescent to adult phase, you get 50,000. And from the adolescent to the adult phase, you are going to get 100,000 farming XP.
Oh, wow.
So,
I mean, if you're going for XP, you should just take the hit on the beans and let them grow.
Exactly. And this is why I think this could be really interesting going forward. Imagine you're popping out, you know, three dragons a day, one in the breeding pen, one in your large pen, one in your large pen two. There's three dragons a day that are coming out. And after a number of days, you're effectively going to have this stack running where you're getting 60,000 from your egg to your... 60,000 from your egg to your baby, 30,000 from your baby to your adolescent, 50,000 from your adolescent to your adult, and 100,000 from your adolescent to your elder, and you're going to be doing that three times every day.
Yeah, that would be.
And you see why this is going to be a supplement to farming if that update does indeed make its way in. And this is, of course, going to increase if you have that if you have the trait that increases the XP. So,
are the secondaries tradable for the potions?
Oh, yes, they are. Yes, they are.
I was just curious to see if that would be profitable for herbal or training. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. What's the current Chinchampa residue at? Let's see. Oh. Maybe it's not. I don't see a price here. Let me have a look on the Grand Exchange profile. I thought they would be, you know, just like anything else in the farming skill, but maybe not.
Huh, okay.
Let's see, Chinchampa. Oh, yeah, they are tradable. Chinchampa residue currently going for 500 GP. So I think it's just safe to say that no one has actually farmed these yet.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so you can, of course, make some money off that. And, you know, you factor in these traits, the dragons are going to be the best way to go for XP. So I think that this is perhaps the most underestimated thing that people were looking at on day one when this update came out. You know, everyone was just going there trying to find the best way to get the beans and to get the best thing going. But you realize that over time, a farm... just like real farms, produces and whatnot. And it's going to start producing a lot once it gets going. So this could have the potential to be pretty game-changing for farming, you know, pulling in that much XP. So
Yeah.
I want to see what they actually end up doing and if that actually does end up going into game because, you know, there's going to need to be some balancing concerns on that, so...
Well, I don't want them to tinker too much because it's pretty good where it's at. And I mean, I put this on par with deep sea fishing.
Yeah.
Like I guess on par with that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, the best part about this is that it has increased it increased the engagement with farming, and farming has always been a skill. Oh, let's just go pop some trees in the ground and away we go, right? But, you know, there's multiple ways to train this now. You have your daily tree runs, you have your daily fruit runs, you have your daily herb runs, and now you have your daily animal checks if you so desire. Or you can have animal checks every hour if you so desire as well. And that's all going to have a good benefit for the skill. So,
well, and you have a reason, because before, a lot of the stuff that you got from farming didn't mean anything. Like, you'd farm herbs. That was the only thing that was worth really anything. But now seeds, fruit, like, that's all food for stuff on your farm. So that's kind of cool, that little tie-in you have there.
Yeah.
So it's not worthless anymore, yeah. You know, you can still do those runs.
Yeah, definitely. And there's also something else, and this one's really hard to see because it's on the far east side of the farm, and, you know, it almost feels as though it's not part of the farm. It's on the way to those bears when you're going to that road between Ardoin and the Legends Guild. It's in that direction, but there's also a bunch of beehives on the farm. And these weren't working effectively on release, but they have been now patched in. And what the beehives do is they effectively produce honeycombs. And what these do is they're kind of like an aura effect for the entire farm. So there's one for happiness, one for weight, one for health, and one for speed. And this will affect the animals that are in your farm. So basically, if you throw marigolds into the beehives, it'll produce a delicious honeycomb that boosts happiness. Rosemary will produce dense honeycombs that boost weight. Woad leaves will produce medicinal honeycombs that boost health. Nasturtiums produce runny honeycomb that boosts speed. And snapegrass produces sweet honeycombs that boost attractiveness, which increases beauty marks. So basically on that does control the amount that that the merchant will buy your animals for. So you can – this is another further aspect of optimization here at the farm, and that's to do the beehives. Yeah. And, you know, people really didn't look into the beehives on this. So
no, there's a perfect example of this. Now, I wouldn't want to do it, but day of release, you could make 6 mil an hour off wood leaves just going to Falador and buying them as came up in the shop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. I forget what it was today. I was in Clan Chat, and the marigolds are still, you know, going for like 100K a piece, the flowers.
Oh, it's your time to shine, Shane.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I didn't put any marigolds in yesterday's herb run, but I did today.
I bet.
And, you know, it's perfect because I have, you know, 600, 700 marigold seeds just sitting in the bank.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, overall, I think the player-owned farm has hit its notes. There's a couple other things I want to touch on before we move on. I wanted to actually do the music first. And, you know, I think this is something that we don't do enough of. We don't talk about the music in various RS updates. So I just want to go through a little bit of the music here. And this is what the login music looks like. We won't hear too much of this because, you know, you hear the login music every time you come in to games. So let's just have a listen. And with that, you can hear the standard RuneScape theme in there, and you can also, of course, it's very farm themed as well. So there's that one.
Very bluesy.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another one called Summer Lovin'. This was put up on YouTube by someone. It's not the official Jagex link. So I wish they would put it up though.
Thank you.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
RuneScape Polka.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I would, you know, just say to everyone who is doing the farm, you know, turn your music on, turn your sounds on. If you normally play with your sounds off, it's a pretty big deal for these tracks. So, very good. So, all right. I think the last thing I want to talk about in regards to the farm here is the rewards. Now, the rewards are something that everyone is going to look at. So everything is bought with beans, and you, of course, need to expand your farm, and you can start with your additional small pen, your medium pens, and your large pens. There's also the bank chest that you can buy for 300 beans, the farm totem. And now this is something that people are going to need to take note of, because, you know, you might be wondering, oh, why isn't this coming into effect? Well, farm totems need to be attached to a pen in order to enable that animal's perk. So you do need to buy one of these totems with 200 beans in order to start using the perks that your animals have. That is something that could have easily been missed with this update.
Oh, yeah. So you have to have the totem to get, like, the dragon hide.
No. You get the dragon hide. You get the dragon hide and the eggs, for example, no matter what. But if that dragon has a trait on it that makes it give more XP, you would need the farm totem to access it.
Oh, okay. So, like, so for the spiders, if you want that Araxor boost or whatever, that's when you need the totem.
Exactly.
For that.
You need to put the farm totem on that, that pen. Yep.
Okay.
Noted produce allows all produce coming out of it. So, like, you know, the dragon hides and the items from the rabbits and so on and so forth to come out as noted. There's that. Seasonalizer for 5K beans, and that's what everyone's going for on day one to unlock comp. Multiple trait boost. Unlocking this gives all animals an increased chance of having multiple traits, and this will stack with their parent traits, and then you can get an enhanced version and a large version of this that basically increases the chance of doing that. Then there's the animals you can purchase, including, you know, sheep, cows. You can reroll names, you can reroll traits. And then here's where it gets really interesting. This is another potential avenue of doing XP. So I mentioned the dragons are going to have stupid amounts of XP coming off them if we're allowed to have multiple of them breeding at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's just say instead that you put you put one pen of dragons to be optimized for XP, and that's fine. And then another pen you're going to optimize for beans, and you're going to sell those dragons when they reach adolescent age. Now, combine that with doing adolescent zygomites and whatnot, you can get lots of beans coming in from this update, and then you can purchase magic beans. And these magic beans are going to change the way people can get farming XP and make them go very, very fast. So much so that they give a bit of a teaser to us with this. But before that, I'll just say that there's five different kinds of magic beans. There's sundry, which give a random level appropriate thing to be built in mushroom hops or allotment patches. There's leafy, that'll basically work in herb patches, cactus vines, and belladonna patches. There's one for bush patches as well. There's one for fruit trees, and then there's one for wood trees. So basically what this means is that if you were to optimize your farm for beans and you were to get a boatload of beans coming in, you could, in theory, change the way you're farming to include the farm plus these magic beans. And then, say, a double XP weekend comes around, you can just go to an elder tree, pop that woody magic bean into the elder tree, and then instantly you have an elder tree appearing for, you know, 23k XP. That's not boosted.
Oh, wow. So when you say level appropriate, that's for the plot, right? Not the player?
For the player. So if you're higher level, you'll have a higher chance of getting the magic tree if you put it in a regular tree spot.
So if you were to do, like, what I'm getting at is, like, if you were to do an allotment, still the best you're going to walk away with is, like, watermelon.
Right.
Or something, right? Okay.
But the best way to go about this is to use the woody ones and just put them in the elder tree, because the only thing they can grow in elder tree patches is elder trees.
Yeah.
And these
incoming
are,
nerf.
And these are 4K beans each.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were just collecting these beans and optimizing for that, then hey, it's good. Now, other things you can unlock for 1,000 beans: the Master Farmer outfit blueprint. You can get Master Farmer fragment pieces. This will give you enough to build one piece of the Farmer outfit. There's also Trevor the Zygomite, which is a follower pet, and surprisingly, you can also unlock the herbicide and seedicide from this reward shop. And as well as upgrades for the herbicide and seedicide, including the seedicide stealer and the herb hoarder upgrade. And what those do is they will automatically pick up any herbs or seeds that drop. And that's going to be a good one for you, isn't it?
Yeah. And, well, I mean, I have the seedicide because I had to get that when I was maxing because I didn't want to wait. So I did a lot of farming down at Aquanites. But, I had to do it with the monkey face punch bonanza kill me now kind of mini game. So I'm really glad that other people won't have to go through that pain.
And there's one more thing. The Master Farmer title, which is great.
Oh, how much is that one, Shane?
250K.
Beans?
Yep.
Holy cow.
So you know what I'm going for?
The title. It would be much deserved after 250K beans.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I have some parting thoughts on this update. And, you know, before that, I actually just want to talk about the Master Farmer outfit, because this is the first elite outfit in game that does not come from Treasure Hunter.
And it happened to be farming. How cute is that, Shane?
Yep. Yeah. So the elite farming outfit is grand. Let me just tell you about it right now. And this is something I think that everyone is going to want, because it is just going to change the way we do farming once again. Because let's see, where are the stats on it? Master Farmer outfit. So now, basically what happens with this: animals will age 7% faster, just like all the other 7% stuff that we've seen. 10% more beans from the Blair-owned farm. Better chance at positive traits. 10% chance to harvest more hops, herbs, and allotment crops. Herbs will be auto-cleaned on harvest. Planted hop, herb, and flower allotment seeds are auto-watered. Protection payment discount of -2. And here's the other big one. You can cast rapid growth now up to twice per patch per day. Previously, it was only once.
Oh. Oh, wow. This is going to make farming a lot faster.
And 10% chance to gain bonus produce when harvesting fruit trees and bushes. And you'll also be able to get remote farm access to Manor Farm, Herblar Habitat, and Seed Pod teleports if you have them in your bank.
That maybe the best outfit in game.
Yeah, and there's also actually another thing that comes from the farm that your dragons will produce, and that's that's the dragon dung.
Unless they have the constipated trait.
Exactly.
And
they're exactly
not producing any.
And basically, what you get with that is you get ultra compost, half the disease chance of super compost. And using ultra compost on herb patches will increase the number of harvest lives by 3.
So 3 more herbs?
Yes, I think so. I think that's what that reads as.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's okay if you're already farming dragons. Otherwise, I couldn't see like buying it for just 3 more.
No. Yeah. And, you know, that's something else. I never buy super compost. I make all my own.
You do?
Yep. 120 farming was done with me making my own super compost.
You actually grow the watermelons and throw them in the bin? You really do that?
Yeah, I actually ran out of watermelons. I had like 17K when I started after 99.
Wow.
I'm down to like 800 now.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow. I've since moved on to using the coconut shells from my weapon poison adventures.
Okay. Well, wow.
See, there's all these things about farming that I do, but they never see the light of day.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You Iron Man farm.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, there's also this neat little video called RuneScape Spotlight Introduction to Player Owned Farms. I want to give a bit of a listen to this because this is, you know, typical Jagex, and we got to give credit to it as well. So let's just have a watch here for a minute.
Two, three, four.
Hello, my little cherry tomatoes. My name's Granny Pottington. Welcome to my farm. Are you here to take on looking after the animals on my farm? Yes? Your fingers release a little bit green. You'll do. This little old farm of mine, just north of Ardoyne, has been with my family for generations. There's lifetimes of blood, sweat, and Pottington tears in this here soil. But regardless, these old bones can't manage the farm quite as well as they used to. I can't care for the animals or tend to the crops. Oh, it's not as fun as it used to be. I can't go gallivanting through wheat fields, following scores of young men. Oh, those were the days. When you first get here, make sure you come and speak to me on the farm. I'll have a nice little helpful tutorial with me and my good friend Presleek to get you up to speed. Once you finish the tutorial, you'll be able to start building pens to keep your animals in them. You can start this by purchasing pen deeds from the shop, which is neat.
So this is effectively player-owned farm tutorial for anyone who hasn't done it yet. You know, this is pretty much all you need to know going into this. So this would be another way of doing it here as well with this. But, you know, it's traditional Jagex, and they give a bit of a preview of what is available on the farm and the like. So just give this a watch, and, you know, they had actually a fun part in this where someone brought a dragon scimitar onto the farm in the video and was going to slaughter a cow, and that was the answer to, you know, hey, can we kill the animals and whatnot? And the answer is no, and he goes into a tirade about why we're not killing them. So good fun with this video. But give this a watch. You can find it on the posting for the Player Owned Farm update. So, all right. Let's see. What else was there that I was going to mention with this? So, yeah, we can't slaughter the animals, of course. They mentioned that in the video. Before we move on, we didn't really talk about the Gold Premier Club members, did we?
We did not.
So, there's two things you can get at the Varrock Grand Exchange with this. Number one, you can talk to the Guardian of the Vault and you will get 3 universal magic beans. So you can just basically pop those in any farming patch and get a boatload of XP coming out of them. So that's thing number one. And then number two, there's a little chest that unlocks a pet. And this pet is the Jackie the Rabbit pet, which had been kind of teased before the update, but everyone who is Premier Club gets it. And this, they said, is one of the 4 Premier Club exclusive contents of this year. So you can just check the chest at the Varrock Grand Exchange to pick this up.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm not too much a fan of the pets, but I mean, hey, it's a thing, right?
You know, I love pets. I just wish we could have more of them. Because we have so many, and you can only have, like, you know, however many in your house. So
yeah.
Most of them just sit in their interface and never see the light of day.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it for the farm. I don't know that I have much else to say on it. We'll, of course, you know, see if that stuff comes in next week regarding the extra breeding pens. And if that does, that truly changes the equation on this. But moving
and
on.
Loot beams.
Loot beams. Absolutely. So overall, it's a good update. I feel like it's deep sea fishing, like you said. That's a good way of describing it. And, you know, I think any of the negative press that it got out there was in large part due to the fact that it wasn't easily completable on the first day.
Yeah, and I think this is totally in line with what they have done this year of adding and enhancing skills without changing the fundamental mechanics underlying the skills. So, and I like that.
Yeah, that hits the nail on the head of what's needed. And, you know, going into this, I was a little bit concerned with this update because farming is one of the most unique update or unique skills in the game, right?
Yeah.
I was concerned that this might add some element to it that basically drifted away and made it so that people could turn it into an AFK skill. But no, it's not that. It stays true to what farming is, and that's good. So very pleased about that. I also think that, you know, the community consult process on this with the Discord server and whatnot was good along the way as well. So that actually worked. Though, you know, the RuneScape Farming Discord set up by Mod Raven and company was actually a lot less limited than the wider, you know, forum threads and whatnot that are created these days. So. All right. Should we just run through these patch notes really quickly? There's only five of them this week. So basically, spicy stews can once again have a +6 stat level boost. Activities that drain your summoning level rather than summoning stat will no longer block you from restoring your summoning level through standard means. That is indeed a bit of an odd one with that. Using the home teleport spell in Dungeoneering directly from the magic spell book will now work as intended. Some messaging has been updated on the Sandy Clue scrolls to explain to players why they cannot open them anymore, which makes sense. The beach is over. And achievements from the elite dungeons will now correctly add rune score points. You know, you got to have that rune score level, right?
That's right.
So, okay. Month ahead time. Month ahead. Month ahead September. Once again, looking to be a pretty, pretty quiet month. We've already had the player own farm, so we know that went off without a hitch.
That's it.
Well, no, actually. The next one is the quest point shop. The quest caravan and quest point shop. This is, of course, the new JMods project, and they say this is the fifth most desired update from this year's surveys and build a backlog polls. The farm and master skill cape perks were number 1 and 3. And this quest point shop is basically going to let you accumulate a use for all the quest points that we've gathered over the years. There's really not much new information here in this posting, but the biggest thing is that it says you can respec if you ever want to choose a different branch of the perk tree, and there are specific milestone rewards for everyone regardless of which branch you choose, and you need just 25 quest points to get started.
I just can't wait to see if the clan questers like this update or tear it to pieces. That's like I can't wait to see how that is going to turn out because it could go either way.
Well, Sirion is handling this update for Informer, so nice. That's good. You know, I think we'll be fine. I think we'll be fine with this update, all things considered, with this. There's also the Balthazar's Raffle, which we talked about last week. Premier Club chests. These are interesting because this is the first of 4 chests that will be coming each month until the end of the year. And this first chest was the one we opened this week. So I'm guessing the next one will open with the quest point shop.
Oh, yeah. So they shoved all of the Premier
into the last 4 things
and
the
one. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And then there's this one. If you like your Rainbow End rewards, there's one in particular that's a sight for sore eyes. The Rainbow Lizard has a color-changing tail, and Craston will make you the center of any party. So, you know, what they did here is they just basically inserted, hey, we're going to be doing a little bit of a Treasure Hunter update with this.
Yeah. Uh-huh. By the way, Captain Corporate's here. You can buy Treasure Hunter keys. Come on, guys.
So... yeah, that's what we got for September. So quest point shop should be interesting. So
yeah, quiet month.
All right. Well, let's move on. Before we do that, we have a discussion topic from Tycho. We're going to give thanks to our wonderful Patreon supporters. And this week, that's Cody T, Nora, Kyle and Brock H., thank you guys for your wonderful support.
Thanks.
For supporting this podcast and what we do. It means the world to us and everyone who is involved with RSBNB Update. So if you're wondering what this is, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB and you can figure out all about our various tiers. So for $1 a month, you'll get a special mention in our show notes and early access to our show notes, and you help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you receive a special VIP rank in Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and high-quality stereo AAC versions of the podcast that we've been putting out for a few weeks now. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out every week on the podcast and exclusive access to outtakes that we use for the clip show. And what we're currently working towards is our live show tier and our live streaming tier, but we'll be hearing more about that at the Patreon town hall that we're going to be hosting in the middle of the month, I think. So
yeah, I can't wait for that.
Yeah,
so it'll be fun.
Anyone who wants access to that, all you need to do is subscribe, and same thing for all the monthly bits that we did, from the EOC special to the player moderator special. All of those are available for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/RSBNB. So, all right. We ready to ready to move on to this question here?
Yeah, let's see what Tycho has.
All right. So, dear RSBNB, Player on Farms is out, and as I expected, I've seen Shane run around like a kid in a candy store. I don't know if I'd go that far. And I have no doubt that you've explored through the update through and through. As usual, I have a few questions that I would like your opinion on. Number one, as you've mentioned several times, the lack of updates in the latter half of the year has not gone unnoticed. However, after seeing an update like this, do you think it was worth the wait? And more importantly, do you think the waiting time will be remembered? Number two, I've personally been making a few millions of GP by buying and selling, or by selling animals at World 2 to other players. Rare animals such as dragons have been going for up to 40 million GP. What do you think about the player interaction and the pricing of these animals? And three, after some time, I realized that there are so many animals that could have been included and there is so much more that could be added. I really hope we get some additions before the end of the year to make the farm a bit more lively. What animals would you like to see added to the player-owned farm in the future? Thank you, and see you at RuneFest. Okay, number one.
It's a lot there.
Yeah. I think this update will be remembered because this week everyone was talking about it. And, yeah, you know, it was the complete focus of attention from launch day until today, practically. Everyone was busy. Everyone was busy, you know, doing their various things with that and, you know, looking at the update and figuring out what they want to do with it, farming mushrooms for zygomites, farming dragons, you name it. So I think it definitely was worth the wait. And I don't know if we were necessarily waiting for this. I think the waiting time wasn't necessarily for the farm. It was just for a gap that existed in content, I think. And that's the way I see it. How do you see it?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think, and I don't know if he was asking about if the farm was going to be remembered or if it would be the gap in between. I think this gap will be remembered because it was too similar to last year's gap in the summer. Now, I love the farm update. They did a great job with it. I mean, it's good. It's very complete, and that's what I really, really like about it. I don't think we're going to have unfinished business with this farm update, right? It's good. And so, you know, I think that being said, I would have still liked to have seen some additional content over the summer. I don't think it was fair to not have that kind of content just because we – received a very complete and good update in September. I don't think that necessarily offsets it. They've got the people that could handle this. And, you know, if there was not such big projects going on, I think we would have had more content. I don't think the dry spell was because of the farming update, but rather because of the mobile. And we've seen the information, you know, about mobile this week. Presumably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, on that, you know, just the news you speak of is Old School RS is being released in full on October 30th. And I've seen tweets from gaming websites saying that RuneScape is coming to mobile on October 30th.
That's
wrong.
What I was afraid of.
But yeah. Old School is getting the branding of RuneScape with that from the gaming community.
And you know what? That's what people are going to remember. So they're never even going to know about RS3 because they're going to remember the way RuneScape was. They're going to see Old School, and then they're going to see, oh, there's a couple new bosses, but it's the same damn game. I don't know. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
Sorry to hijack that question on that, but that was actually big news this week. Yeah. You know, we're not an Old School podcast, so it doesn't you know hit the top of the list, but you know, just on speaking of the wait and presumably mobile, it might not be mobile, it might be something else of what's affecting it, but it's definitely there, that wait. And you know, for us, it's just week by week, and it's different producing an episode for a featured update versus a non-feature update. Like if you look at our analytics and our numbers, and specifically the numbers of the weekly bite, because that's what people bite onto, pun intended. The weekly bite numbers for headlining updates, so ED1, ED2, and this, they're an order of magnitude higher than just the patch note weekly bites. So
yeah, and that makes sense.
Yeah, you know. And you know, there is a difference in producing for those weeks. So,
right.
I don't know. The wait for me doesn't bother me because it lets us catch up in other things that we're doing, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, that's fair.
And I don't know if the wait was for the farm or what, but I'm personally not going to remember the wait. But I think players will if we don't get something that's going to shine, you know, in our eyes brightly at RuneFest. So, and that's apparently what the announcements are being saved for.
You know, I'm really worried about what is going to be revealed at RuneFest now.
We know, like, the theme is Fremenic.
I know, but I am so worried that we are going to get another year where we get all these highfalutin promises and we don't end up getting crap out of it.
Well,
like, that's what I'm really afraid of.
The only thing we really didn't
of.
Get this past year was the bank rework and the skilling offhands.
Yeah, no, this year was good, but do you remember the year where we're supposed to have a church of me and we didn't get anything? Yep. Like, that's what I'm afraid of. Like, I don't know. Oh, we forgot. What animals would you add, Shane?
You know, I honestly really can't say. Like, there's enough animals in the farm right now to handle what it needs to do. But I think a good thing to add for Christmas time would be reindeers.
Reindeers would be cool.
Because we're at that point where an update needs to take 6 to 8 weeks to go through the design process. And if it's just to start now, that puts it in line to come out in December. So that would be a perfect time to hit on that. So I don't think there's going to be any new animals this year, but I think reindeers would be a good one to start with. You know, I think there could have been other options as well, like maybe even unicorns too.
Unicorns, yeah.
Unicorns would have been good.
Yeah.
What else did we get?
You're thinking of useful things.
Yeah, I'm thinking of useful things for farming.
Mine are not useful.
All right, what do you got?
I was thinking alligators.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be good. We have those in the desert. Yep, that'd be good.
Yeah, you know, and you got alligators down there, you know, and then the swamp land. Alligator farm. So, and bats. Bats actually would be useful because you could use guano, which is the, you know.
Wouldn't they fly away? And they're nocturnal?
Probably. I didn't say, hey, it's a fantasy game. I want bats.
Okay. All right.
They fly home. I know, that's like, hey, let's have birds, but let's not put any netting around it. Yeah, you have a point.
Yeah. All right, so there's our animals and the discussion on the wait time. I don't know. I don't think there's much else to say on the wait time. I think it's just I think people are going to remember the farm, and hopefully the quest point shop will be a hit as well. And if we can have two updates that are hit in September, I think that'll be great.
Oh yeah, that would be.
Yeah.
That would be that would go a long way. And then maybe followed up with an October or November with a with the mining and smithing, and boom, we would be there, I think.
I'm leaning more likely that we'll see mining and smithing in November. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll release it in December because, you know, there's that two-week gap around Christmas time and you want to be around to fix issues that crop up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, October is definitely going to have Halloween.
And we haven't heard a thing about that.
No, but they are working on it.
Yeah, I hope it's good.
Yeah. I hope it's traditional.
I hope it's I would love to go back to Duff's house again.
Oh, like, yeah.
I would totally be cool with that.
That was good. That was good. And then the economy. Yeah, we kind of talked about this previously, didn't we?
Yeah.
And you know, it comes from it's that comp mechanism, right?
Yeah.
That we mentioned where, you know, this is in effect farming for combat types, and lo and behold, if you had an elite dungeon, or sorry, not an elite dungeon, a player owned dungeon with dragons in it, it would have been golden this week, but otherwise if not, you're getting crashed every which way, right?
Yeah.
So you know, these animals aren't worth that much. I, you know, sometimes had to take the bullet for this, like that's I was really surprised to buy a dragon for 20 million GP. But it happened. And, you know, it's just like when the pitch can came out. I think I spent around $15 million on that pitch can on day one for it to get an idea of what was happening.
You know, and that pitch can sure proved its weight over Double XP weekend.
Oh, you had one.
Wow. No, but I had friends that did, and yes, it was very, very good. Very good.
So, all right. I don't think there's anything else with that question, so we can move on to tech news.
Yep. What we got this week, Shane?
All righty. So with that being said, if you want to send these questions in to us, you can email questions@rsbnb.com. You can also call or text 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632, or leave us a DM on Twitter at RSBNB. And before we move on to tech news, I'll just note that in our initial run-through of Patreon names, I did forget to mention Adam T. For the first month of the first of the month subscription. So thank you also to Adam for subscribing to us on Patreon as well. So
good catch, Shane.
Yes. All right. So tech news this week: Google Chrome turns 10, and Google turns 20.
It does not seem that long.
No, it doesn't. I remember when we were all using Firefox and Google Chrome was a newly fangled thing because Firefox was bloated as heck and took forever to open and whatnot. Google Chrome was, of course, unique at the time because it had its multi-process tab architecture that allowed you to have one process per tab, which was also good for security. It was also very, very fast and still is if you don't load it up on trash extensions. And, you know, that's why I only run two extensions on mine. So,
wow, 20 years and it has to take over the world.
Yep, 20 years Google has taken over the world. So in this new version of Google Chrome, you'll notice a new look with it. It's through all platforms, mobile, Android, iOS, desktop, Mac, Windows, you name it. It's a simpler look. Personally, I'm not too much of a fan of it on the Mac. I don't like it when Mac apps change the way they look. But it does look pretty good on Windows, I will say that. Basically, what they've done is they've changed the way the tabs work, because in changing the shape of the tab, they would make it so the website icons are easier to see. So if you have lots of tabs open, they'll just compress down a lot more nicely than they did before. They've also updated the way all the prompts, menus, and URLs and the address bar look in the new Google Chrome. So I don't know. Personally, I'm not a fan of it on the Mac. I think it looks okay on Windows, but that's just me. And one of the best things that is actually part of this new Google Chrome is that, you know, you can – we always talk about password managers, right? Like LastPass or 1Password if you're on the Mac. Google is taking a step forward to ensure that people are using secure passwords. So what they've done with this is they've actually included a password generator, so that when you are asked for a new password on a website, Chrome will generate one for you, and it'll offer you to save the password, and it'll save it in your Google account. And, you know, if you have any concerns about Google, or you have any concerns about saving passwords online at Google, you know, you might take some pause with this, but I think it's a good thing for people who just want a quick and dirty password manager. And Safari's been doing this for a couple versions as well. Except Safari doesn't store it in the cloud. Actually, they do, but it's encrypted, now that I think about it. We don't know what kind of encryption Google or Apple is using on this, so, you know, if you're going for the full bulletproof, I don't want my passwords to be, you know, stored online. You need to use something like 1Password. But if you do want them online and you want something that's more heavily audited than Chrome's, then LastPass is definitely the one to use today on this. So there's that as well. And I think everyone can benefit from these passwords here. So there's that. They're also bringing in... I guess we could call it kind of like a Google Now kind of feature to the search bar. They call it the Omnibox. So basically, if you search for something, you search for the weather in a specific locale in the address bar, it'll just provide that with you without needing to go to the exact Google page. So it's basically streamlining and showing how quick you can get information. And that's what Google's core identity belief is today, that they want to surface all the information available through various means and basically bring it to people as fast as they can. And this new Chrome browser definitely does that. Now, there's also a neat little feature that is a true power user feature. And I wasn't aware of this until Sirion and I were chatting about this. But if you search for a website in your address bar, Chrome will tell you if you already have that open. So it'll have a switch to tab prompt, and you'll be able to just pop that open right away from your browser. So for those who use the keyboard, it is an amazing quick little feature for that. And they're saying Google Drive integration is also coming very soon as well with this too. So other personalizations include the ability to add favorite websites to the new tab page, as well as change the background of the new tab page and potentially add new pictures to it, or background images as well with that. And then there's a bunch of under-the-hood changes for this. Personally, I've disabled the new tab page because I prefer to have a thumbnail representation of it rather than just the icon, because I have numerous websites that are on the same web address, so I need to hover over it, and it just reduces the amount of increases the amount of time I would need to spend doing it. So I disabled that. You can do that in Chrome Flags if you don't like the new tab page. But at the end of the day, I think this speaks a lot to where Google is going, in that they want to just be able to surface information as fast as they can for their users, and they're bringing that to Chrome as well. So.
Yeah.
You a Chrome user?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But I use both. I use Chrome and Edge.
Okay.
For different
accessibility.
Different things. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So people should start seeing this in a few days if you're on the release chain of Google Chrome. All right. So you know, this story broke as we were talking last week, and you know, Tanis, we said we might need to discuss this week. Well, here we are. This week, the Senate Intelligence Committee had a hearing involving Facebook CEO Sheryl Sandberg and Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey. Notice they didn't send Mark Zuckerberg this time.
I wonder why.
It's because these people actually managed to look human in answering their questions.
Oh, Marky Mark.
Google was invited, but neither the CEO Sundar Pichai or Larry Page was available for this. They didn't show up, and they were represented by an empty chair. And before we go, I'll
just
say,
another empty chair.
Yeah, I have a theory on this, in that Google recently terminated some contracts with the United States military, in that they didn't feel as though their projects were a benefit because they see themselves as a global company. So rather than just helping the U.S. government, I think the approach they're taking with this is that they view themselves as a global company, so they feel that they don't need to testify in the U.S. in that, because what they say in regards to U.S. law is going to be different to wherever else they put themselves. And I think that's why they didn't show up.
Yeah, that's the whole. I don't know. That's a can of worms.
It really is. It really is. Google definitely should have been there because, you know, they have the most data from Android and whatnot, you know, rivaling Facebook and the like, but they weren't there, which is unfortunate. And, you know, they have been opening up in – they wanted to open up in China and whatnot as well. So there's that going forward. But a lot of the talk focused around election meddling and both what Twitter and Facebook are going to be able to do going forward to prevent that from happening. And the general line that has been repeated by Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey throughout this was that we haven't done a good job of that. And this was everywhere from, you know, failing to provide external researchers to access to the data, or providing people who would – providing data to people who would use that data on malicious interference, or failing to inform individual users when they've been targeted victims of, you know, phishing attacks or Twitter fake accounts impersonating them, or just, you know, providing anything to its users to say why a certain piece of content is where it is. And, you know, that was the general thing from Twitter's angle on this. And, you know, one thing he actually admitted on this is that they're going to look at flagging accounts on the timeline who appear to be bots. So if you're scrolling through your timeline, you're going to see a little notification if Twitter thinks the account you're interacting with is a bot.
Well, all right.
And, you know, this article really stabs a hot knife through Twitter in this because, you know, just read a passage here. It says, "We haven't done a good job of that in the past," was certainly a phrase of the morning for a contrite Jack Dorsey. And while admitting failure is at least better than denying you're failing, it's still just that, failure. And I think that describes Twitter as a whole, and it has since the very beginning of it, because it was the company for the longest time that didn't know how to make money. And with that, you know, you still don't know if it's a viable company in terms of money and whatnot. But I think at the end of the day, the only thing that we really pulled out from this is that both Twitter and Facebook are willing to work with the United States Congress to address issues that they bring forward on this, you know, whether it be the bot issue or people being impersonated by fake accounts, or the perceived shadow banning that's been going on as well. And they actually said in this hearing that we're gonna say when an account is shadow banned, rather than just saying, oh, there's no information to display here with that. Now, the question, of course, for Twitter is, will they act on this? And, you know, I don't think we need to say much about Facebook. We know what Facebook's stance is, and ultimately at the end of the day, Facebook says, you know, we don't sell data. We just use your data to provide more relevant ads to the users, and we feel that's good for the user because that increases engagement.
Yeah, you know, but I think that in of itself is part of the whole, you know, bot problem, because they see what you're looking at, and now they're just going to surround you with more of those memes and create more of a, you know, this shell that you're in, and this tunnel, and you don't get other perspectives. You're just being reinforced constantly with what you already think anyway. I think it works the same way as the ads. So if there's a bunch of Russian bots out there that are telling you what you already kind of think, then you're gonna get those too. But I don't know. At the end of the day, it's important for people to realize I don't care if you're Facebook, Twitter, Google. I don't care if you're working with the Congress or not. They are not loyal to you. They are not loyal, patriotic companies. They are global companies. They are multinational companies. And they do not care at the end of the day about red, white, and blue or anything else. They care about green. That's the color they care about.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, all these things that were agreed to by them, you know, could be agreed to in principle, as they say. But, you know, when it comes down to it, there's no guarantee that they'll actually put these things into practice. So,
yeah, that too, because there's nothing binding here, right? I mean, it's just a, you know, a happy, let's feel good. Yeah. You know, session.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's also talk about, you know, what is a protected class and isn't on Facebook, right? It's like, why should some people be protected but not others? And by doing that, these companies are creating the distrust that people have of them. And it's not going to get better, and it's not, because just as we were getting ready to record this today, Twitter did ban Alex Jones and his InfoWars website from the platform, and this is a day after they were testifying in Congress. So, you know, you can guarantee what was said in these hearings. It's not
they didn't shadow ban him, though. I mean, they did it all right.
And there's going to be lots of questions, more questions on this. And, you know, I think we've talked about this before. I know we've talked about it in pre-show. We both agree that online should be free speech and that anytime there's an online platform, it should be self-banning, self-blocking. You know, if you don't like what someone's saying, block them yourself. Don't have some company in San Francisco deciding what is okay and what is not okay online. And, you know, And the more and more we look at this, I don't think an answer from the United States Congress, granted this is where these companies are headquartered, is the way to go about this. Because they can make a law for the U.S., but that law does not affect the European Union, that law does not affect Canada, and does not affect all the other countries.
No, I mean, I can fix
and
this.
And it doesn't affect China.
I can fix this very simply.
Get off
all
Twitter.
The corporations have to abide by the Bill of Rights. See, I don't like that they have to listen to some amendments, but yet they don't others. So they get to control the power of the First Amendment, right? That's not the government. The only person that is prohibited from censoring speech is the government. A company can do it all they want, right? Yeah. But yet they have to abide by the 14th Amendment. They can't say, "Oh, you can't come into my establishment because of the color of your skin." Well, that doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Like, they should both be consistent. They should have to abide by the rules of the Bill of Rights, period.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, you might also say Google maybe wasn't there because they're trying to get into China. And if they talked about these issues, that might affect their ability to get a search engine going in China.
Are you saying they would put their profits ahead of their patriotism? I don't believe it.
Well, I mean, this hearing provided a whole lot of nothing. You know, maybe we'll get some little icons showing if someone's a bot, but, you know, there's nothing that's going to change. And today's actions by Twitter just proves it. So,
yeah,
I got a somewhat next up. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't expect that to go to that URL. Okay. I got to get the next piece of tech news. But our next piece of tech news is actually talking about the European Union, because the European Union wants to make some changes for Netflix and other IP companies in Europe. They basically want to say that 20% of all content on Netflix should be produced in the European Union.
What?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Oh, sorry, 30%.
Mm-hmm.
30% of the catalog must be produced in the European Union. And this is a law that is coming from the very top of the EU. This would affect Netflix and Amazon and other streaming services. And, you know, when you think about it, there's no real point in doing that today, because You can get a proxy server. You can get a VPN server. And I can make my connection look like I'm coming from the United States. And people in the European Union can do that as well and just get the content that they want to see that way. And, you know, I would have thought we would have learned this with, you know, all the DRM and whatnot that we had on we had on platforms back in the day where people – it just drove piracy. But I guess not. But this would be affecting all of these other streaming companies. And basically, this law would put these production quotas in place for these companies. And, you know, are they gonna do that? Or are they just going to say, nah, maybe we'll just not offer you as much, right? And it'll just become, you know, a paltry shell of what you could potentially get on Netflix.
That's probably what we'll end up. I mean, I get what they're going for, but I don't think it works when it comes to type of market. Right. Like when it comes to streaming, that doesn't work. Now, I think that's perfectly acceptable if you're talking about, I don't know, an actual like strategic good. So that you don't lose all of your manufacturing capability. Like that, to me, that would make more sense. But Netflix, and doesn't really make much sense. And I usually typically agree with European Union regulations, but this one, not so much.
Yeah. Starting in December, all 28 member states would have 20 months to apply these new norms, and countries could even choose to raise the quota from the minimum 30% to 40% if they so desire.
I think it's going to hurt themselves.
Yep. And, you know, they're just going to go elsewhere for that content. And, I mean, you don't want that because that just creates piracy, which we dealt with in the early 2000s. So we might be heading back that direction. And we've said this before on the show that it certainly seems as though that, you know, the online streaming folks these days are becoming just like the old cable networks or cable providers.
Yeah, I just don't – I guess I'm not – I'm not – I guess I don't understand because, like, how many jobs are really created by making the content in the European Union? Like, are there really that many out-of-work European actors that can't come to the U.S. or wherever else that Netflix is filming their – producing their
– Yeah, I don't know.
Shows? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, there's got to be a money angle that I just haven't figured out yet because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and you know, I could see it for cultural reasons as well, you know, like to ensure there's a culture product. But, I mean, when you have 28 member states, what's the defining culture of the European Union? So that's not even an answer for them.
Well, and I mean, honestly, we've always been – like we have always been the leader when it comes to movies and entertainment. Yeah. Like that's just – I don't know.
It was only recently they started coming north to Toronto and Vancouver to shoot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyways, there's our tech news for the week, everyone. Hopefully that was enjoyable and useful to you. So,
And not painful.
Not painful. Yeah. All right. So skill of the month. August skill of the month. Construction. Sorensen blew everyone away.
Just annihilation.
Yeah. 40 million construction XP gain. Second place was Pernasius with 22.1. And third place was the RR Man with 1.5 million. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's how that goes, right? Oh, man. I hate to know what he spent.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
It's expensive.
And we had the farming skill of month going on here in September. As you can tell, I'm not really that into it this month yet. Sorensen has already gained 5.4 million XP.
Oh, ouch.
And
you're gonna let Sorensen beat you?
Well, you know, I didn't know it was coming, and this is everyone can attest to this. I didn't know it was coming, and I had already invested in double XP weekend, so it. Okay. It was a surprise. Otherwise, I would have been able to do more. But I'm hoping to, you know, shift the needle a bit more. And, you know, 1 million farming XP a day. Okay. I'm trying to think of how that would be done. I have some ideas, but it's a lot of work. So we'll definitely need to get there. And I think I can do that. I just need to get the player-owned farmed research out of the way, and then I can start with my traditional farming rigmarole with this. We also have Poison Nova in second place with 2.1 million XP. That's a name I haven't heard in years, but you know, he was involved in previous farming skill of the months, and One Stone Pwn, who's also a fan of farming. I think all these people just signed up because they want a chance to beat me.
Yeah, I think you can pull it together, and I really hope you don't get beat like a kettle drum. But watch out for Sorensen, because the man is he's a serious threat.
Yeah. All right. We also have our Informer Roundup for August. Dragging our way out of August, a bit of a roundup of what we had for that month, including Sirion's article on Dungeons & Dragons, the Dragonkin Laboratory, and also a farewell to RuneScape Classic from Alex, and your Gaming's Fall lineup article too. So that was a fun one to look at. So what's your favorite game out of the ones you mentioned in there?
My favorite that I really, really want, I can't get. So that's I want Red Dead Redemption 2 so bad.
All right.
But we don't know when it's going to come to PC. So next up, I'm probably looking at Battlefield 5.
Okay.
World War II game, you know.
Yeah.
And it's got a really good campaign. So
Or
supposed to have. So
yeah,
I might try
it's got that Battle Royale mode too.
Yeah, because that's what we need.
Yeah, more of that.
Yeah, there's not enough Battle Royale out there.
Okay, so I have a full admission here. We have 67 achievements over Double XP weekend.
A lot.
That would be 33, 34 each.
A lot.
And, you know, we could read through these, but we would be here forever. So we're not going to do that. But instead, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to point everyone to the full show notes at update.rsbnb.com, where you can find the full list of all of these achievements. Actually, you know what I'll do? I'm just going to do this for the hell of it. I'm going to read out the 200 mils in 120. How's that?
That's good.
I'm going to read out that Touchpad Pro on September 2nd got 200 million summoning XP, and Tycho, wow. Tycho of all people, got 200 million defense XP on September 1st.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I had no idea he was that dedicated. All right. Yeah. Next up, the 120s. Super J got 120 Hunter on September 1st. CompSci got 120 attack on the September 1st. Touchpad Pro blazed right past 120 summoning and got that on his way to 200 mil on the 1st. Chodo 3000 with 120 Dungeoneering on the 1st. Tasty Romeo with 120 Slayer on the 1st. Xenon Ray with 120 Dungeoneering also on the 1st. Robbie with 120 summoning and 120 Firemaking on August 31st. Nicely done, everyone. Lots and lots of achievements there.
Yes, very, very, very good, guys. You really really pulled out all the stops. Although there is one more, Shane. Did anything interesting happen to you over DXP weekend?
I'm going to wait until the What Have We Been Doing section to go through that
story. Oh, okay, okay.
So, all right. Time for Pick of the Week. So, you know, one thing that has become increasingly available to us over the years is an increased amount of data. And, you know, there's lots of interesting things you might need this data for. You might be writing an economics report. You might be writing a history report. Well, if you're looking for general data and, you know, you can't find it on Wikipedia and then source it from there, there's a website called ourworldindata.org, and there's lots of interesting ways at looking at this. So one of the things they have on here is the Technological Diffusion and Adoption Report, and this one looks specifically at U.S. households. And what you can see here is you can look at this chart and you can see when all the various pieces of technology came online. So the household refrigerator wasn't that common in the 1920s and 30s. In the 1930s, only 20% of households had one. But by the 1960s, nearly 100% of households had a household refrigerator in the U.S. Same thing goes for electric power. It wasn't that common in the 1900s, but between 1910 and 1930, it jumped right up there. And then you can see that for all these various other aspects here. And you can see even the computer ones just coming online, tablets, ebook readers, those were popular. Then they took actually a bit of a dive, believe it or not. And then the automobile one is interesting as well, because you can really see automobile usage go up and down during wartime and whatnot too. So there's lots of interesting little things for this. And perhaps the most interesting one on the technology adoption curve is the landline usage in the year 2000. You see that one just to start to drop.
It's interesting.
Yeah. There's also fixed telephone subscriptions. You can see that worldwide. It really shows what countries have the most landline telephone subscriptions. Of course, you know, Europe still has the most of them, even more than Canada and the U.S. South Korea and Japan are also up there pretty high. But also on mobile cellular connections, you have any idea who would have the most?
Who likes their cell phones? America?
Nope.
No. Huh.
The U.S. is 117.59 per 100 people.
Oh, that's because we don't have any money anymore. Okay. No, man. I don't. UK?
No.
UK?
The
no?
highest falls into countries of the like of South Africa, Russia,
what?
And Saudi Arabia, with the most mobile cellular subscriptions per 100 people.
What?
Yep.
I'm confused. How is that? They must not have any landlines. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe landlines are hard to put in there.
Now,
yeah.
There's also one here for internet adoption. You'd think it would be the United States or somewhere else, but it's actually Norway. 96.8% of the population is connected.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Japan, 91%. South Korea, 89%. So these are the ones that you would think would be the highest. And there's also ones like secure internet servers and whatnot. So this is just one report on technology. There are other reports on this as well. You could go for, you know, health as well. There's a report on health, so you could go by causes of death, cancer, smallpox, alcohol consumption. Let's go to the alcohol consumption one. And you can see basically alcohol consumption in the U.S., how it ebbs and flows basically through time. The 1980s was a really high period, as was the 1910s, give or take. So, and you know, you can see per capita as well. Belarus, that's the highest liters of pure alcohol consumed per year for people aged 15 plus, 17.1, Belarus.
It sounds like a great resource for research and stuff.
It really
like,
is. It really is. And, you know, there's information about how they get the data. They have data on how you can cite their data as well if you want to use it as well. So it's all there well. Terrorism, nuclear warheads, politics, basically anything that you're thinking of for data, there's a good chance that they might have it on this website, and that's ourworldindata.org. So it's fun to look at. And there's also one here for Moore's Law, and you know, it was supposed to be doubling, but you can see that it's just basically it's progressing on track, and it has slowed down recently in the mid-2010s. So it's all there. All there. Ourworldindata.org. Okay, so what have you been up to for Double XP Weekend?
Well, I streamed and worked on the competition, because we had a clan month-long competition that culminated in Double XP Weekend. So I did mostly summoning. I thought I'd be done with summoning the first day, but I just kept saving charms, and it just kept dragging on and on and on. So I never really had time to do much cooking, but I did do a little bit of fletching, but mostly summoning. And 83 mil that weekend, so it was the best I've ever done. Best
and
one
dare
day
ask
game.
How much that costs?
It wasn't too bad because I kept like swapping the pouches back and forth. You know what I mean? So like, as soon
for
as
shards.
I'd get them, yeah, I would swap for shards, and I used yak hides, so that's a cheaper way. And then also, I use fire and earth talismans because they're
the same thing except cheaper.
Yes, exactly. So I used them. It may have been 80 to 100 mil.
Okay, that's not too bad for 120 summoning.
Right, and luckily, I did come in third in the competition, so I won a Nox bow, a full set of Serenic. I got a Death Bracelet, an Amulet of Souls, and a Mass Cap Codex. So it was well worth my effort. And that was third place. So. And then the top two people decided to make a side bet on Friday when DXP started that whoever won would get both prizes for first and second. So my poor my one buddy, he did great. My other buddy, on the other hand, put up like 360 some mil on the month and walked away with nothing. Poor guy. I would not have made that bet. So, yeah. So it was rough.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Anything else?
No, that's really been the excitement. That and just the farm this week. Messing around with that and trying to mess around with it enough to learn it, but not so much because I was really burnt after that weekend.
Yeah.
But anything interesting happened to you, Shane?
I made over 9,000 super prayer renewal potions. I had about 2,000 left, but I ran out of time. I just didn't have time because I, had a bit of a gathering on Saturday, but, different things that can end up happening with this. And, that's weird. That's really weird. Apparently my XP wasn't tracked on the RSBNB high scores. What happened there?
Uh-oh,
indeed. Oh, that's because I did it on the wrong day. Never mind. We're good. Okay, so, as I was saying, I did those Herbler potions, and, expensive. Stupidly expensive. I figure that I have about 150 mil that I can sell back now for these potions, depending on when the prices stabilize, and I'll do that, and we'll roll that into the next batch of potions to make. So that was the main goal for this adventure with this, because it needed to happen, and these had been stacking up for quite some time, and at the end of the day, I wound up with 7.2 million Herbalore XP gained.
Nice.
And then with our little discussion we had with Tycho last week on the show, I had planned on doing 99 construction because I had my plank maker working for me. So then, you're so close to maxing, do it. I'll donate to you if you do, so on and so forth. So we did that. Then I decided, I'll be damned if the last 99 I get in this game for max is dungeoneering. So on Friday, a bunch of us sat down and, those are quick, 12, 13 minutes for a large, and we basically ran through some of the dungeons. I think we did, four of them, and we got the remaining 700k XP that I needed for that. Got 99 dungeoneering, so that was good.
Very nice.
Then after that, I proceeded to do the construction with my planks. Got 99 construction, doing the prawn brokers with the plank makers, so that was good. Then on Saturday, this is where it gets interesting, I had intended to have a ceremony. I had intended to invite people. I had intended to make a big deal out of it. I had intended to do it without protein bars to get my final 99 in 99 smithing in RuneScape after over 15 years of playing this game. I had intended to do it with a real rune item and not a protein bar. While AFKing, and, you know, we do this other podcast called Western Context, and I was doing that with Patrick Kinkala. And, you know, I was just – because you only need to click once every 5 minutes or so for the protein items, right, to do a stack of 60.
Yeah.
So I was doing that while we were doing the show, you know, click along every so often. I thought I was still level 97. I got level 99 smithing while I was AFKing doing this podcast. And I had no idea what had happened because I was sitting here, I was doing the show, and I was talking about I was talking about NAFTA, of all things, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And I'm sitting here and I see there's this text go by, this blue text, and then Clan Chat starts freaking out. So as I'm doing that, I just flip over and I see, oh, I scroll up and, oh crap, news, Shane1288 has achieved 99 smithing. Shane1288 has just achieved at least level 99 in all skills. And then a wall of text from the clan chat. I had to scroll up and see what it was, and I maxed while I was AFK on a protein bar.
Well, congratulations, Shane. That is awesome. And you need to start your fashionscaping now. And go to the Max Guild for...
I haven't gone to the Max Guild.
Jeez. Yeah, don't tell people that.
Because what I want to do is I want to
have... Do you have a party?
I do. Okay. I do.
Okay.
I want to do that. And I want to... I've been trying to find those fireworks that we had from some event a long time ago. I don't think you can still get those. The Guy Fawkes fireworks.
I don't remember them.
Because what I want to do is I want to have a scenario where I deploy a portable forge, I make a rune something or other, and then some fireworks go off. And then we have the party, and we open the guild to the max doors. Just to do it properly. I want to do that.
Okay.
So I don't have a date for this yet. I'm thinking perhaps – I don't know. When do you think we should do this? I'm thinking perhaps maybe a Saturday a week from now. So watch, you know, Twitter and whatnot.
Yeah.
Watch the friends chat. Watch Discord, and we'll see what we – can do on that, but I want to do it properly in that regard because I didn't intend to do it with a protein bar of all things.
Yeah, and we want to come and celebrate, Shane. you were there at all of our maxings, and we got to come and support you. I mean, I don't have any fireworks. I got like water balloons and barrels of monkeys. And, you know, it's not a party unless there's a monkey, right?
And we can't make guns with invention. We can't fire them into the air.
We cannot. I have a water balloon shooter, but I don't think that's the same thing.
No. So that was my double XP weekend. I had hoped there would have been time at the end to go through my skilled dummies, but I didn't even get to that because Saturday was pretty busy. So I really only had 2 days to do stuff. But yeah, it was a very fulfilling double XP weekend, as the last of them have been. So, But now straight on to the farm. So that's where we're at today. But I'm done. Anything else?
No.
All right. Well, then, everyone, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. If you want to join us in-game, head on over to Friends Chat, Bits Bytes. We're also on Twitter at RSBNB, and you can find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And with that being said, we'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.